Welcome to Augmented Humanity. Our guests are modern explorers working at the intersection of technology and the humanities. They help us to understand ourselves and the worlds we create in this digital age. They are thinkers, creators, makers, and academics working in diverse fields like civics and government, the law, anthropology, and archaeology. I'm your host, Craig Goldsmith.
I'm your host, Ellen Dornan.
On this program, we're talking with Julie Napolin, who helped create the Price Lab podcast, and by Sarah Milinski, the Price Lab program manager and podcast producer. Price Lab podcast is a series focused on the people who are building, using, and critiquing the digital tools and techniques that are transforming the humanities in the 21st century. In an earlier segment, you talked about how you try to curate what you're doing and presenting. So how do you go about that? Do you have big brainstorming meetings? Is it just one person who just says, here, do it? What's that process look like?
We generally have interviewers come in who are from the DH seminar at Penn that the Price Lab hosts. So oftentimes we're asking those people in the seminar if they're comfortable to come in and be a host and join us. And if they say yes, they're invited to come and talk. You know, obviously there's a sense of what kind of research and scholarly work a person is doing and how might that intersect with what the guest works on and whether or not it could be kind of like a productive conversation for the two folks. I would say that Stuart is a host in many ways because I think his voice is the one that you hear when you come onto the podcast. You know, he's always involved. If he's not actively interviewing someone, he's behind the scenes helping set up those guests. I definitely pitch people that I think might be interesting or topics that I think might be interesting. And if it makes sense, we had a scholar, Wendy Chun, on the podcast, and I actually thought of inviting her because she was coming in to give a lecture at the Wolf Humanities Center, which is another center at Penn that I work for. So I work for both Price and Wolf. And I thought the work that Wendy does is really fantastic. And like, it might be something of interest for the Price Labs audience.
One of the things that's cool about the podcast is that because most of the people who are being interviewed are scholars, these are people who are used to being in the classroom and used to lecturing. So they're used to addressing an audience. What goes along with that is usually more of a technical way of speaking. And so the podcast, I think, is an opportunity to speak more informally and casually about the things that they're really passionate about. The podcast is a nice way to bridge those different ways of speaking about something that the interviewee has a really deep and scholastic knowledge of, but to speak about it in a different way that exceeds the lecture form and the classroom form and the seminar.
Do you coach the interviewers in trying to draw out what I guess are mostly academics in speaking maybe more in lay terms? And I'm thinking the way that I sometimes approach the subject material, which is sometimes asking the person to restate it in what I think of as plain English or explaining acronyms or terms that may be very familiar in an academic setting, but not always so familiar to the general public.
One of the things that we did when we were first starting the podcast was we got going a list of questions that interviewees would be asked. And if I'm not mistaken, the questions included things that academics aren't usually asked, which is, how did you get interested in the thing that you're doing now? I think that kind of question automatically puts the person in a different mood and reaches them on a more personal level, and they're invited to speak more biographically and therefore more informally about the things that really drive them. And so I think when you begin from that place, the conversation is just naturally going to unfold in a less technical way.
With that in mind, Julie, how did you get into this career that you have now parlayed into so much success, at least from my outside perspective?
Yeah, I guess I am successful. That's kind of cool. I'm just one of those people who always just did my own thing and always just followed my own interests. And for me, one of my strongest early interests was music and sound. I wasn't interested in music in a very formalist sense. I didn't want to study scores and compositions and notes. I was interested in the culture around music, and that led me to an interest in technology. So very early on, I was studying the history of sound technology, phonographs and radios. And as the technology evolved, my interests evolved into the digital. And when I was working on my PhD, I kind of took a little bit of an unapproved hiatus from writing my dissertation and enrolled in a class on radio journalism, which was how I learned how to use Pro Tools and how to interview people. And I started making kind of meta pieces in that journalism class about sound technology. And my first little piece was about a music store in Mill Valley, California, Village Music, that was going out of business. And they had focused on vinyl, and they had just impacted the history of American music in a really deep way. And that piece was my midterm for the class, but it ended up getting picked up by NPR and winning an award. So I was like, okay, I'm onto something here. So yeah, I just kind of kept following those interests. And as the technology changed, my interests changed along with it. And so that's why teaching this class in podcasting came along, and then collaborating with Sarah on the Price Lab podcast.
Like a sort of perfect apotheosis of all of that.
Exactly.
And so, Sarah, what about you? How did you drift or intentionally drill right into your given career?
My interests are definitively multivariate. So I was an educator, actually. I did youth media education for over a decade in Baltimore, Maryland. And so I've always really been interested in learning media and understanding media and kind of exploring what you can do with it. That also gave me this ethos that I'm like, well, you can learn how to do something. Like, you don't have to feel as if it's an impenetrable medium. You can actually just pick it up and figure it out, you know, a little bit as you go along. It's how I describe my process. I have a little bit more of a background working in video production. Like, I've done commercial video work, oftentimes for nonprofits or for the city of Philadelphia. So I have more of a background in video than I do sound. For me, it was like a really interesting experience to come to this medium, and I just have so much to learn. And I was really grateful that Julie was there to be very generous. Part of it was just us wanting to think about different ways we could reach a wider audience, or any audience, just to share what we're doing. And we had talked about video, but it was just too labor intensive for what I could do and what my job as an admin would allow me to do. So that's sort of how I ended up doing this. And I'm very grateful that it worked out. And, you know, I've been inspired. I study coding now. I'm actually studying computer programming and web development. So that's something that directly came out of me doing this podcast and learning about these things, that I was like, wow, there's so much potential, you know, and people are doing such interesting things. And I come from not a technical humanities background, but from a media studies background. And I also fine arts, you know, I have a degree in fine arts as well. So for me, this was like a really interesting place to land. It makes sense in a way. I'm grateful to be able to do it.
The coding, were you inspired by like a guest or just the needs of the program? I'm curious.
I think in part because I update our websites. I could just learn HTML and CSS, but I want to learn Python and go a little deeper. So right now I'm learning more robust languages or more high level languages, but I'm also studying HTML and CSS. As an educator, I think I just love the pedagogical experience, and I love to be learning all the time and just figuring out what else I can do. And I've done documentary filmmaking, and I see kind of different forms existing online, and there's different ways that you can approach that. And so part of this is also just for my own practice as an artist to see like what else I can do. It's sort of the jack of all trades, master of none problem, but I like to dabble.
That sentiment always bothered me because I think you can be a master of all trades, but maybe that's just my own drift of constantly trying to learn and pick up skills.
Yeah. I think the saying is jack of all trades, and mastery is beside the point because the technology is evolving all the time.
There you go. I'll take that.
That's also a very circular way of coming back around to the different guests that you end up having on your particular program. Do you try to have a mix of very straight academics and maybe people that are more on like the technology side? And I don't know if this is a good comparison, but sometimes we have people who are very much new humanities or digital humanities. Like, we had a guest that runs the Native American comic book store and publishing house in Albuquerque. And he's been archiving and putting online all of these Native American conceived and drawn comic books. But that's sort of straight humanities. But then we've also had people that are doing sort of cutting edge work in collecting what they may call community archives, where they're trying to do digital captures of audio, video, oral histories, and then put them online in these sort of searchable meta databases. So do you also try to get that kind of mix?
I can just say briefly that everybody is an academic for the most part. Our managing director, Stuart Varner, has a background as a librarian, or he got a degree in library science. So he really brings in a lot of people from that sphere as well. And so it's a lot of folks who work in the digital humanities, but in the academic context.
I would add to that that there are some people who bring an activist dimension to their academic work, where they're deeply motivated in their scholarly work by their activist interests. I'm thinking, for example, of Jesse Daniels, who I had the opportunity to interview on the podcast. And in a way, it's almost secondary that she's an academic. And I think Stuart, for example, really wants to connect the Price Lab to ongoing issues that shape the communities in Philadelphia. And so a big part of that is activist work and also the history of Philadelphia as an urban center and just the different politics and ecologies that shape the life worlds of Philadelphia, both today and in the past. So I think naturally you have people who are academics, but they're not just purely theoretical in their thinking.
That's the better question to ask in this context. Like, there's work that's what I think of as strictly academic and theoretical, but then there's work in academe that is much more practical. I'm really curious because we've had guests that in a way are digital humanities activists. What does that look like? Because I think when listeners hear these kind of connections to the community, I think it can be very resonant for the listener and for the community as a whole. So are there other examples of that or other guests that you've had where that's really been resonant?
Before, you had talked a little bit about Alex Gill and the minimalist computing and working with marginalized communities to do less. I mean, to do more with less.
Yeah, I love that work. And I can't remember if I gave this example before, but he works with incarcerated people, teaching them how to make Twitter bots and how to be able to access Twitter and in a general way, but just to be able to do digital work from within these incarcerated spaces where they can't access very much technology. And Alex also worked in projects in the wake of different hurricanes in the Caribbean and ways of using the digital humanities in order to map what was happening there and also create networks where people could actually connect others with resources there.
Did he work on that project where they went down and they were getting oral histories from people so that they could better advocate for services and relief efforts for these communities? Because there were a lot of narratives of, well, we sent them aid or whatever. Everything's fine now. And so they were going and getting these stories and sort of elevating these voices so that they could really target different communities that had been overlooked in some of the hurricane relief efforts.
I don't think that that was the project that he worked on, but it's resonant with that kind of work. I'm also thinking of a historian at Penn who works in the history of redlining, and he's done some mapping projects just to show the impact of quote-unquote urban renewal in Philadelphia. And so that project comes to mind too, being able to make visible the kind of devastating effects of urban renewal on communities.
Just amazing. Julie, Sarah, thank you so much for being with us on the program today. Really, really appreciate it.
Yeah, it's great to be here.
And if you would like more information about the Price Lab podcast and the work that they do, you can visit pricelab.sas.upenn.edu/podcast. Augmented Humanity is a program of the New Mexico Humanities Council, produced in partnership with KUNM-FM. You can visit us online and find out more about our programs at nmhumanities.org. Our theme music comes courtesy James Whiten, and we've had production assistance from Tristan Klum.